The good news about preventing or even reversing the aging process is that it has become realistically possible. The time of wishful thinking has passed. Increasingly, the medical community knows what we're dealing with as the body ages, which wasn't true before. In fact, aging was quite a mystery. There is no single process known as aging. Instead, aging is as multidimensional as life itself. To hear that aging is almost impossible to define will surprise most people. They identify aging with its symptoms: loss of muscle mass, wrinkles, fading vision, and so on. But the symptoms of a cold aren't the same as knowing the actual cause, and the symptoms of aging are as far removed from the cause as a runny nose is from the cold virus. Current research has zeroed in on genetic changes as the key, and genetic activity, as we've seen, can be strongly influenced by lifestyle. Since people are living longer, it's realistic to say that past age 50, you will enter a second lifetime. And unlike children, who spend the first two decades of life occupied with developing into fully capable human beings, a 50-year-old can bring a wealth of knowledge, skill, and experience to the second lifetime that now presents itself. In a word, how you age today, or don't, will turn old age into a rising arc or a steady decline. Despite the influence of genes and biology, the choice is largely yours. As things stand, the universal experience of growing older can't be reduced to a single cause or a single result. What society believes about aging and the elderly can be just as important as what's going on biologically. The adage, "You're only as old as you think you are," points to a third factor, the psychological. Taken altogether, the picture of aging has been confusing, leading to a collection of basic facts that apply differently to each person as follows. Formerly, aging was thought to begin biologically, starting around age 30, and proceed at around 1% of physical deterioration a year for the rest of a person's life. Now we realize that this view was tied to symptoms of aging. At the cellular and epigenetic level, signs of impaired function can and do begin much earlier. The whole body-mind system is affected by the aging process, but not at a predictable rate. Because the aging process is so variable, some people are biologically younger than their chronological age, some older. Aging leads eventually to death from a specific breakdown in one system, usually the respiratory system. At the time of death, the vast majority of cells are still functioning normally, or at least well enough to keep the person alive. For every typical sign of aging, there are at least a few people who improve as they grow older, including in such areas as memory, muscle strength, and mental acuteness. This raises the possibility that aging may not be necessary. If that's true, why do we age? Faced with such a confusing picture, medical science couldn't make aging fit the disease model. Aging isn't the same as getting sick, even though the elderly are more prone to illness than young adults. The holy grail in physics, sought after for many decades, is known as the theory of everything, a unified explanation of all the fundamental forces in the universe. In medicine, there is no comparable theory of everything in regard to aging. When you catch a cold, you will exhibit symptoms over the course of a week, typical of almost everyone else who catches a cold. But aging takes decades to unfold, and no two 70-year-olds are exactly or even approximately alike. You are a unique person, and aging highlights your unique qualities. Anti-aging took a leap forward in the last two decades, when it became clear that the aging process is centered on DNA. Now we know, thanks to the field of epigenetics, that a lifetime of experiences constantly affects gene activity, leaving marks or imprints that last a long time. No one can say with certainty if a specific marker lasts for years, decades, or a lifetime, but the crucial fact is undeniable. Your lifestyle has genetic consequences. Even identical twins born with the same genome will exhibit gene activity in their 70s that is as different as two siblings who aren't twins. Sometimes the differences will be the same as between two total strangers. The most recent breakthrough in anti-aging is the finding that the aging process begins young. In a 2015 Duke University study, headed by Daniel W. Belsky, the focus was on biological age, how old your body is, as opposed to chronological age, how old you are by the calendar. Traditionally, the aging process has been studied primarily in old people, who already show symptoms of lifestyle disorders. Instead, the Duke team looked at 954 young people tracking the biomarkers for aging at three different time points between ages 20 and 40. Already, before midlife, individuals who were aging more rapidly were less physically able, showed cognitive decline and brain aging, self-reported worse health, and looked older. This finding helps boost the idea of anti-aging by pushing the whole issue back decades before the signs of disease and infirmity are advanced. As we've been demonstrating throughout this book, a long trail leads to the start of many disorders, and now aging, which affects every system in the body, joins the list. Finding the most reliable biomarkers for aging is still controversial. The possibilities range from deep neural networks to T cells and epigenetic markers. Only when this issue is settled can anti-aging be measured with confident accuracy. Right now, there is no gold standard for measuring aging. This isn't a surprise, given that the process is incredibly complex and affects each person differently. Yet, by any standard, the burden of anti-aging rests with each individual, not with the promise of a silver bullet in the future. As you make your choices today, keep one thing in mind. Just as you are unique in the way you age, anti-aging will also be unique. The more you understand the aging process, the better you can individualize your anti-aging program. Here are the most important variables that affect aging in general, according to the best recent research. Successful aging. Top 10 variables. 1. Satisfying relationships with family, friends, and community. 2. Emotional resilience, the ability to bounce back from setbacks and losses. 3. Stress management. 4. Anti-inflammation, including diet and inflamed emotions like anger and hostility. 5. Good sleep every night. 6. Meditation, yoga, mindful breathing. 7. Moderate physical activity throughout the day, standing up and moving to break up long periods of sitting. 8. Positive attitudes toward aging and the passing of time. 9. Absence of toxins including tobacco and alcohol. 10. Youthful mindset, curious, open, always learning new things. Listed roughly in the order of priority, these variables provide insight into how people age well. We should note, however, a cutting-edge theory of aging that holds inflammation responsible for every aspect of the aging process. Although unproven, this theory may be the wave of the future, considering that so many lifestyle disorders basically occur in old age and at the same time are linked to low-grade chronic inflammation. As with every aspect of a healing lifestyle, waiting until you show visible symptoms of aging comes too late. Aging is the ultimate example of a creeping, incremental change surrounded by a litany of influences. Anti-aging is also incremental, but clear in its strategy. Maximize the positive input your body-mind receives every day, and minimize the negative input. Input is an all-embracing term, but the best research points to the areas everyone should focus on, which is what our do and undo recommendations are about. The do side. We present only one age-specific choice on the do list: taking a multivitamin and mineral supplement if you are over 65. We explained why this choice is important in the Monday section of the 7-day action plan. The other choices pertain to your welfare and happiness right now, based on the notion that a happy life is built upon being happy every day. The longest-running study on aging is the Harvard Study of Adult Development, now 80 years old, which arrived at findings summarized in a headline at the website Harvard Gazette: "Good genes are nice, but joy is better." The study began in 1938 with the intention of following 268 Harvard sophomores throughout their lives. The subject population was later expanded and diversified. Only 19 of the original subjects were still alive in 2017, but their 1,300 offspring are being studied along with their wives and additional inner-city volunteers. Robert Waldinger, a psychiatrist and professor at Harvard Medical School, who now heads the study, reports, "The surprising finding is that our relationships and how happy we are in our relationships has a powerful influence on our health. Taking care of your body is important, but tending to your relationships is a form of self-care too. That, I think, is the revelation." This finding fits into previous points we've been making about heart disease, for example, where answers on social support or a spouse who expresses love turn out to be good predictors of who will exhibit symptoms of heart problems and who won't. At the opposite extreme, to quote Dr. Waldinger, "Loneliness kills. It's as powerful as smoking or alcoholism." These findings aren't tentative or confined only to an upper social group. As the article on the Harvard study goes on to say, "Close relationships, more than money or fame, are what keep people happy throughout their lives," the study revealed. Those ties protect people from life's discontents, help to delay mental and physical decline, and are better predictors of long and happy lives than social class, IQ, or even genes. That finding proved true across the board among both the Harvard men and the inner-city participants. Our do choices focus on this key finding. The more social support you have and the happiness you find in relationships will continue to affect you throughout your lifetime. In the old age, as outdated attitudes are labeled, the golden years were a euphemism for being stuck in a rocking chair and being of no use to society once you passed 65. In addition, people looked forward to being happy after they retired, setting this as their main goal rather than being happy here and now. The ethos dictated that you worked as hard as possible during your prime years and postponed happiness until you retired. It was one of the perks, so to speak, of not having to work. In the new old age, a set of attitudes still evolving, chiefly among baby boomers, there is no intention of retiring as long as one's work is useful and fulfilling. In aid of this, people intend to preserve their healthy status for as long as possible, preferably until the final illness. Where the new old age needs to grow is in the area of social support and relationships, because happiness for too many people is still an individual project. The ethos of American individualism stands at the opposite pole from a communal society like Japan or countries with policies of social welfare like almost every European nation. In our list of do choices, we present meditation as something where going it alone seems mandatory, but even there, people who join meditation groups are more likely to keep up their practice. The most valid measure of quality of life is how happy you are, how fulfilled and contented your lifestyle has made you. People who spend their careers becoming secure financially often lack any but rudimentary skills in sustaining a happy relationship. We can't address this problem in full. That would take 10 times more space than we can devote to it. But Deepak's book, The Ultimate Happiness Prescription, makes the following points. Happiness is hard to predict. People think that they will be happier when they have more money, a baby, a job promotion, and other external factors. But there is no correlation between these expectations and actually being happier. While having enough money and security is an important component of being happy, beyond that point, making more money doesn't increase happiness, and often has the opposite effect of adding more stress to a person's life. Because it is so unpredictable, happiness should be addressed today rather than postponed for the future. Each of us has an emotional set point, like the body's metabolic set point, that chiefly determines our mood from day to day. After an unhappy event, whether it's a bad breakup or a financial loss, we return to our set point, generally within 6 months. Even taking this set point into consideration, the current psychological understanding is that at least 40 to 50% of happiness depends on lifestyle choices. In the world's wisdom traditions, the fickle nature of human happiness cannot be solved by seeking happiness externally. Only by finding a level of the mind that is established in inner peace and contentment can the problem of unhappiness be solved. This is in keeping with our chapter on the end of suffering. The undo side. The choices offered on the undo list revolve around a central theme, getting unstuck. You have to be as resilient in your approach to life as your cells are. If you are rigid in habits, behavior, and attitudes, you will incrementally decrease the ability of your cells to thrive and remain strong in the face of challenges. Remember, the body-mind is a single process operating with hundreds of sub-processes 24 hours a day. No experience goes unheeded. Clenching your mind is the same as clenching your fist. At a certain point, you will develop a cramp. Begin today to look at the negative attitudes that tend to increase with age if you aren't mindful of them. These include the following. Growing old is horrible. It's all downhill from here. The prospect of death is terrifying. The best years are behind me. The past was a lot better than today. You can only look out for number one. People always let you down. Time is running out. These attitudes and beliefs are not testable against reality one way or another. They are held not for factual reasons, but for emotional ones. The whole point is how you choose to feel about your life and the future. If you hate and fear the thought of growing old, aging will become more and more negative as time passes. Every new sign of growing older, from graying hairs to pains in your joints, will be another reason to hate and fear where life is taking you. Limiting belief systems are the major obstacles to healthy aging. It is important in mind, body, and spirit to always be looking forward to something, today and tomorrow, while not obsessing about the past. Since every belief is a personal creation, it can also be uncreated. We devote Thursday to core beliefs and how to change them, but for now, the undoing process involves a few mindful steps. Associate with inspiring, happy, older people beginning today. At the same time, cultivate connections with young people. Don't participate in conversations in which people complain about aging. Every negative belief about aging can be countered by consciously replacing it with a positive belief as follows. Growing old is horrible. It's all downhill from here. Replace with, my life is a rising arc. The best is yet to come. The prospect of death is terrifying. Replace with, fear never solves anything, including this. The best years are behind me. Replace with, I can create a better future if I choose to. The past was a lot better than today. Replace with, dwelling on the past cancels out the possibilities of today and tomorrow. You can only look out for number one. Replace with, all my life I have looked out for others, and they have looked out for me. People always let you down. Replace with, people fundamentally are doing their best. Time is running out. Replace with, there's always enough time. Since beliefs are held for emotional reasons, we aren't saying that positive beliefs are always factually true, only that your emotional state is where the most powerful motivations lie. That's a very significant part of aging successfully. Having a positive attitude toward it makes an enormous difference, given that decades of living are involved. Positive thinking, however, tends to be superficial and therefore not as important as self-acceptance. When you have that, even the worst indignities of old age, which of course we want you to avoid, don't turn into a downward spiral. A strong sense of self weathers any storm. The telomere connection. Now that it's accepted that people age differently, it's critical to know why. Aging is such a holistic process that you might suppose that no simple answer about why we age differently will ever emerge. But that may not be true at the cellular level. Cells have their own lifespan ranging from the early stages, marked by rapid division and fresh renewal every time a cell divides. This is the period molecular biologist Elizabeth Blackburn calls luxuriant growth, ending with a stage in which no more divisions occur and the cell is tired and unreliable in performing its basic functions. This is the period known as senescence. A senescent cell breaks down on several fronts. It sends out faulty chemical messages and fails to interpret incoming messages correctly. Its ability to heal itself slows down and eventually comes to a halt. Pro-inflammatory substances can start to leak out through the cell membrane into surrounding tissue and the bloodstream. It seems more and more possible that when our cells age, so do we. The most striking support for this theory comes from research into our genes, and specifically a section of DNA known as a telomere, which caps the end of each chromosome like a period ending a sentence. Telomeres are non-coding DNA, meaning that they have no specified function in building cells, but they are far from passive. Their function seems to be to preserve cells, Every time a cell divides, which happens constantly somewhere in the body, its telomeres are shortened. Longer telomeres are typical of young cells in the stage of luxuriant growth. Shortened or frayed telomeres are typical of weary, senescent cells. The leading researcher on the subject is someone we've already briefly mentioned, molecular biologist Elizabeth Blackburn, who shared the 2008 Nobel Prize in Physiology or Medicine with Carol Grader of Johns Hopkins and Jack Szostak of Massachusetts General Hospital for their discovery of telomerase, the enzyme that replenishes telomeres. Now the head of the Salk Institute in La Jolla, California, Blackburn covers every aspect of cell aging and renewal in her 2017 book, The Telomere Effect. Co-authored with her close research colleague of 15 years, health psychologist Alyssa Eppel. They convincingly describe telomeres and levels of telomerase in the cell as our best marker yet for the mysterious and multifold process of aging. This also implies that by increasing one's telomerase levels and thereby causing telomeres to grow longer, a healthy lifespan can be founded on cells that keep renewing themselves for decades. In their book, Blackburn and Eppel cite a startling actuarial prediction. There are currently around 300,000 centenarians existing around the world, a number that is rapidly increasing. According to one estimate, reaching age 100 is about to become so commonplace that one-third of children born in the United Kingdom will live to be centenarians. The issue of protecting your cells is suddenly more urgent than ever. We highly recommend reading Blackburn and Eppel's book. Its wealth of information needs to be absorbed in detail. But the bottom line is to understand what puts your telomeres at high risk and low risk. The book's survey of all the pertinent research dovetails with everything we've been discussing under a healing lifestyle as follows. Your telomeres are at low risk if you have no exposure to severe stress, have never been diagnosed with a mood disorder, enjoy good social support, including a close confidant who gives good advice, friends who listen to you and with whom you can unburden yourself, and relationships in which love and affection are shown. Exercise moderately or vigorously at least 3 times a week, preferably more. Get good quality sleep for at least 7 hours a night. Consume omega-3 rich food 3 times a week while avoiding processed meats, sugary sodas, and processed food in general. A whole food diet is best. Are not exposed to cigarette smoke, pesticides, and insecticides. The opposite is also true. Your telomeres are at high risk if you are being exposed to severe stress in your life, have a history of being medically treated for anxiety or depression, lack social support from friends and family, lead a completely sedentary lifestyle with no regular exercise, even light activity like walking, suffer from chronic insomnia or cut your sleep shorter than 7 hours a night, consume a diet high in fat, processed foods, and sugary sodas with no attention to sufficient fiber and omega-3 fatty acids, you are exposed to cigarette smoke, pesticides, insecticides, and other chemical toxins. These points summarize the research-supported risk factors presented by Blackburn, and as with any risk-based program, some people are more affected than others. Severe stress is one of the most thoroughly damaging factors. In one study, caregivers who tended Alzheimer's patients had shortened telomeres that predicted a shortened lifespan of between 5 and 8 years. Blackburn also lists a number of commercial labs where people can pay to have their telomerase level analyzed. It's also significant that the lifestyle choice is known to decrease the risk of heart disease, particularly the intensive one devised by Dean Ornish, who we talked about in Chapter 3, have a beneficial effect on telomere length. Extending the program to cancer, Ornish had another impressive finding. A group of men with low-risk prostate cancer was selected for study. Low-risk means that their cancer was at an early stage and slow-growing. Prostate cancer can take decades to advance, and the current recommendation advises balancing the risk and reward of doing any active treatments, a change from the era when any cancer was immediately treated and usually aggressively. The men were put on a variant of the heart disease protocol. They ate a low-fat, high-fiber diet, walked for 30 minutes a day, and attended regular support group meetings. Stress management was included, and there was training in meditation, mild yoga stretching, and breathing. At the end of 3 months, the group that was on the program had higher telomerase levels than the control group, which meant that their cells were aging better. Stress seemed to play a key role, because the greatest increase in telomerase occurred among the men who reported having fewer distressing thoughts about prostate cancer. Ornish followed some of the men for 5 years, and those who stuck with the program showed telomeres that had increased by 10%, reversing the usual expectation as cells age. If stress levels determine how well or badly our cells age, this should show up in meditation studies, and it has. Blackburn cites 2 studies conducted at meditation retreats that were 3 weeks and 3 months long. At the end of the 3-month retreat, meditators had higher telomerase levels compared with the control group. In the 3-week retreat, meditators showed longer telomeres in their white blood cells than the control group, which showed no change. How long would it take for these effects to appear? And how intensive does your dedication to meditation have to be? There is no definitive answer, but probably the best clues come from a collaborative study that we carried out with Blackburn and other leading researchers participated, conducted at the Chopra Center in Carlsbad, California. Women in good health were divided into 2 groups. One group enjoyed a spa vacation without other interventions. The other group went through a program led by Deepak that included meditation and a variety of Ayurvedic treatments. At the end of the week, everyone reported feeling better, which attests to the likelihood that most people are in sympathetic overdrive, because simply going on a week's vacation improved their sense of well-being. In the same vein, there were improvements in gene expression activity in both groups, including the chemical pathways that trigger inflammation and the stress response. There also appeared to be a meditation effect on telomeres and telomere protective genes. These occurred in the meditation group among experienced meditators. The fact that it took only a week to produce results that started to be significant points to the conclusion that you are doing yourself some good almost as soon as you take up meditation, and that the practice needs to be regular and long-lasting. We are encouraged by how strongly telomere research validates the healing lifestyle this book advocates. It also underlines the conviction that cells benefit directly at the genetic level from conscious lifestyle choices. Blackburn ends her book with a visionary telomere manifesto that would prioritize protecting our cells as a part of parenting, social relations, the fight against income inequality, and global outreach for the planet. Like all visions, this one depends upon individual decisions, and one comes away from the telomere effect even more persuaded that anti-aging begins by keeping our cells in a state of renewal. If there are no new startling things to do, becoming more optimistic about your own aging is valuable in itself. Thursday. Stand, walk, rest, sleep. Today's recommendations. Choose only one. Do, stand up and move around once an hour if you are working at the computer or at a desk job. Walk 5 minutes for every hour you work. Take the stairs instead of the elevator. Park your car far away in the lot when you shop or go to work. Be regular in your sleep routine. Make your bedroom an optimal sleeping environment. We'll tell you more about that in a few minutes. Walk for 20 to 30 minutes in the evening. Take 10 minutes of quiet, alone time, preferably in meditation, twice today. Spend more time with a physically active friend or family member. Undo. Replace 10 minutes of sofa time in front of the TV with a walk instead. Break the habit of waiting until the weekend to catch up on lost sleep. If you drink alcohol, do it early in the evening. Go to bed without alcohol in your bloodstream. Replace the mid-morning coffee and donut break with a walk. Walk to one place close by that you usually drive to. Examine your excuses for not being more active. Not getting enough sleep bothers many people, but it can't be addressed alone. Today's theme is expanded to include the complete cycle of rest and activity that benefits the body-mind. As a society, we've created a situation with sleep that works against the biorhythms governing the whole system. If you sit all day and get no significant exercise, you can wind up too tired to go to sleep, because the rhythm of sleep and activity has been disturbed. Research has shown how interlocked our needs for rest and activity actually are. To keep your biorhythms synchronized, four elements must be present. Standing. Simple as it sounds, the human physiology depends on gravity. Seminal research in the 1930s showed that college athletes, when confined to bed for 2 weeks, lost months' worth of muscle tone in their training. Standing up for only a few minutes a day keeps muscle tone intact. It also appears to aid in recovery from surgery, which is why patients are no longer advised to get constant bed rest in the hospital, but encouraged instead to stand up and walk if they are able. Walking. Although exercise delivers more benefits the harder and more frequently you exercise, the baseline for activity is walking. Research has shown that the widest gap in levels of physical activity, medically speaking, occurs between those who take zero exercise and those who get up off the sofa and do something, no matter how meager. Walking is now a regular practice in recovery from serious illnesses and surgery. Rest. After heavy physical exertion, rest is necessary to replenish your muscles and restore internal balance. Most people have no difficulty with this because they feel exhausted after heavy work or exercise. But the need for mental rest has only recently been taken seriously. If you equate mental rest with lethargy and dullness, that image is misleading. People who practice meditation, which among other things rests the mind, emerge with sharper alertness. Meditation doesn't dull the mind or put the brain to sleep. There's actually increased brain activity in alpha waves, for example, which are associated with creativity, resulting in a state previously unknown to neuroscience, restful alertness. Sleep. Researchers still don't know why we need to sleep at all, except that undeniably we do. The most recent theory is that sleep allows the brain to rid itself of built-up toxins during the day. These include, during the deepest stage of sleep, the removal of senile plaques that can cause Alzheimer's disease. It is also during deep sleep that we consolidate what we have learned all day as short-term memories into long-term memories. Without these activities, our brain, as well as the rest of our body, can undergo damage done by lack of sleep and poor sleep. Let's do a deeper dive. The first thing everyone notices when they spend a sleepless night is feeling tired and groggy in the morning, sometimes throughout the day. This becomes a chronic complaint from insomniacs, yet even when someone says, "I didn't sleep a wink last night," dream studies reveal that intermittent episodes of sleep do in fact occur, even though they may be fitful and shallow. If someone is forced to stay awake the entire night, for example, in a sleep clinic laboratory, more serious deficits begin to show up, such as lack of motor coordination and attention. These are serious causes of motor vehicle accidents. Chemical imbalances start to show up, particularly in the flow of hormones, which are precisely balanced according to our circadian daily clock. Not getting enough sleep can disturb your appetite, because the balance of leptin and ghrelin, the two hormones that govern hunger and satiation, has been thrown off. Except in a sleep lab, few people go beyond losing one night's sleep. The brain's demand for sleep is too hard to overcome, but extended lack of sleep leads to headaches, muscle weakness, tremors, hallucinations, and other serious symptoms. Because these drastic effects aren't experienced doesn't mean, however, that you aren't suffering from sleep deprivation. As with low-grade chronic stress and inflammation, the habit of losing sleep creates problems incrementally over the long run. Insomniacs run a higher risk of anxiety and depression, for example. Knowing this, psychiatrists will caution their patients who suffer from chronic depression to be on the lookout for poor sleep. This has been shown to be one of the earliest signs that a bout of depression is about to begin. It also marks an early enough stage that the onset of depression can sometimes be averted simply by correcting the irregular sleep pattern. Use of drugs like cocaine will often lead to poor sleep, which then leads to depression and anxiety, stoking a desire for more drugs in a vicious circle. In a 2003 review article in the journal Behavioral Sleep Medicine, the authors reported wide-ranging psychological effects. Insomnia was consistently predictive of depression, anxiety disorders, other psychological disorders, alcohol abuse or dependence, drug abuse or dependence, and suicide, indicating insomnia is a risk factor for these difficulties. This finding has its milder implications, as anyone who has lain awake worrying knows all too well. The review article goes on to note that insomnia is associated with decreased immune response. While the data were inconclusive over whether insomnia is a risk for cardiovascular disorders. Sleep studies tend to be small, and the definition of insomnia is fairly ambiguous, but it sounds disturbing that the regular use of sleeping pills is a risk for mortality, that is, a shortened lifespan. A 2012 study at Scripps Health in San Diego linked popular prescription sleeping pills to a five-fold increased risk of early death. This study indicated increased risk of death for both casual and heavy users. One of the usual suspects, inflammation, also seems to enter the picture. In a 2010 study, subjects were kept awake for 24 hours or more and showed increased markers for inflammation, cytokines. The results weren't significant enough to be called clinical, needing medical treatment, but it's notable that increased inflammatory markers also showed up in subjects who were awakened after only 2 to 4 hours of sleep. No reliable cause could be found for the increased inflammatory markers, but speculation pointed to autonomic activation and metabolic changes, which we simplified as sympathetic overdrive, described in Chapter 5. In other words, the sympathetic nervous system was put under stress. The stress and strain of modern life keeps the sympathetic nervous system chronically stimulated. When you toss and turn, unable to get to sleep, you may blame the thoughts running through your head of physical tenseness and tightness, or a nameless refusal of the sleep response to click in. But these diverse symptoms are generally traceable to being in autonomic overdrive. The stress response has been subtly activated, and one effect is to be alert. That's part of responding to external threats. In acute stress, the pupils dilate, heart rate rapidly increases, and the surge of adrenaline demands action, either fleeing or fighting. Low-grade stimulation of the stress response isn't so dramatic, but at any level, the stress response negates falling asleep. Stress and sleeplessness form a vicious circle. And if you are also stressed out about your insomnia, the effect is only aggravated. Our recommendations about stress reduction will go a long way to breaking the stress-insomnia connection. The do side. Babies and young children fall asleep effortlessly. Being tired from a physically active day also makes sleep automatic. But most of us expend fewer and fewer calories per day in physical activity. Studies have shown that sitting at the computer uses about 80 calories an hour. You can use 8 to 10 more calories by walking for 5 minutes 4 times an hour, and over the long run, this is enough to control the slow, gradual weight gain that plagues people as they age. Over an 8-hour workday, adding just 10 calories an hour, if regularly kept up, would offset 20,000 calories a year, or around 6 pounds of weight gain. Standing desks are gaining in popularity, and they have some health advocates. However, standing adds only 2 calories an hour over the energy expended sitting down. The trend toward using fewer calories is likely to increase in the future, which eliminates the easiest way to assure sound sleep. Therefore, our recommendations focus on some basic lifestyle changes you can adopt for life. You may wonder why we haven't included the standard governmental recommendation of moderate to heavy exercise lasting at least 30 minutes 3 to 5 times a week. The answer is compliance. Studies have shown that Americans are exercising a little more than in the past, but the age group that takes exercise is young, 19 to 29 years old, with steady declines every decade thereafter. The least active group are seniors, and that needs to reverse. Longevity and good health in old age increase with activity and decrease among people who give up and sit all day. Everyone over age 70 in good health would benefit from mild cardiovascular workouts and mild weight training, even into their 90s. For the sake of compliance, the secret is to habituate yourself early. Being regular in simple things like standing and walking makes you much more likely to keep up the habit as you age. For mental alertness, meditation is recommended because you get to experience the state of restful alertness. As we pointed out above, this is a state of awareness that is neither asleep nor dull. In restful alertness, the mind is fully awake but not stimulated. Everyone at every age group will benefit from making this state a familiar habit. Your sleep environment. Here's a checklist for turning your bedroom into an ideal place for sleeping. 12 steps to getting the best sleep. 1. Make the room as dark as possible using blackout shades or wearing a sleeping mask. 2. Make the room as quiet as possible. 3. If you share a bed with someone who snores, wear earplugs. 4. Avoid using your bed for work. 5. Don't text in bed. 6. Keep your room on the cooler side. 7. Stop watching TV at least an hour before bedtime. 8. Keep the TV in another room. 9. Make the room as soothing to the senses as possible with colors and scents. This should be the room in your house you associate with relaxation. 10. Buy a comfortable mattress with sufficient back support. The firmer, the better for most people. 11. Use a hypoallergenic pillow. 12. Wash bedclothes frequently enough to eliminate dust. The first imperative is a completely dark, preferably pitch-black bedroom. There's a physiological reason for this. The pineal gland, which is buried deep in the brain, is crucial to regular sound sleep because it is sensitive to light. As you sleep, brain activity fluctuates, and at the end of 7 to 8 hours, you rise toward wakefulness in waves. You aren't aware of being awake until the last wave lifts you out of sleep. Yet, if your bedroom is lit with morning sunlight, you will tend to wake up too early on a shallow wave. This interruption can be fairly easy to overcome. You bury your head in the pillow and go back to sleep. But, because you didn't get 7 to 8 hours of continuous sleep, you will usually feel groggy once you are fully awake. If you're a frequent traveler, you might notice how well you sleep in hotel rooms. That's because they have blackout curtains that make the room considerably darker than the average bedroom. Blocking out extraneous noise is important for two reasons. It can keep you from falling asleep and also wake you up too early on one of those shallow waves. Another recommendation, aside from improving your sleep environment, is to take your daily low-dose aspirin, recommended for all adults as a preventive for heart attacks and even some forms of cancer, at night. As we mentioned earlier, minor aches and pains that go unnoticed during the day can become irritants when you get into bed. Taking an aspirin helps to eliminate this often overlooked contributor to insomnia. The undue side. If noncompliance is the obstacle on our do list, inertia is the enemy on the undo side. Habits are self-reinforcing. If you skip a day of exercise, for example, it's easy to let the next day slide. Yet for every skipped day, you lose the benefit of a day of exercise. So inertia leads steadily downhill. As a side note, this pattern pertains to who has a good sex life as they age. The people who are most likely to have satisfying sex are the ones who didn't stop. Having sex reinforces itself. Not having sex reinforces itself. We believe that avoiding inertia rarely works if someone adopts a strenuous habit like running every day. For every 100 people who adopt this routine, few will maintain it for life. The day comes when you quit running, and then there's a steep decline before you reach the place occupied by people who don't run and never have. Yet the example of brushing your teeth every morning reflects how easy it is to adopt very simple, undemanding habits. Over a lifetime, if you follow the pattern of stand, walk, rest, and sleep every day, you will do a great deal to stay in optimal health. Our undue recommendations gently nudge you to avoid the slow trend toward inertia. One reason that people give for not exercising when they took it up to lose weight is that exercise didn't work. Not only did they not lose weight, but because exercise is physical work, so far as your metabolism is concerned, they gained weight by being hungry. In regular strenuous exercise, like training for a marathon, there can be weight gain because the training regimen replaces fat with muscle, and muscle weighs more than fat. Of course, a marathon runner's heavier body is likely to look more attractive than the body of a couch potato of the same weight. For a long time, the complaints about not losing weight were ignored until genetics revealed that some people are biologically disposed to increase their metabolism during exercise, which burns calories, while other people are not so disposed. As a system approach would predict, genes don't tell the whole story. What you eat and how you eat also affect metabolism, as do your stress level and the hormones controlling hunger and satiation. The cloud of causes is prevalent once again. Leaving weight aside, even though it's one of the biggest reasons that motivate people to exercise, along with looking more attractive, being physically active also has varying effects. At one extreme are those who get the famous runner's high. At the other extreme are people who just get very tired when they run. Strenuous exercise is associated for some with being good at sports, a positive reinforcement. There's no positive reinforcement, however, if you hate a gym class and never made the team in a sport. The upshot is that how you feel about being active should dictate your choices. There is no one-size-fits-all exercise program, despite the benefits promised by the governmental guidelines about regular exercise. Our concern is to cross the gap that separates a totally sedentary life from an active one. Our solution is the stand, walk, rest, sleep formula. If you can go beyond this stage, more power to you. But be aware of one important thing. Stand, walk, rest, sleep isn't a bare minimum that marks you as a slacker. Instead, it's a healthy norm that you can maintain for life, even when the winning high school quarterback has developed a pot belly along with his beer-drinking buddies. Friday. Core beliefs. Today's recommendations. Choose only one. Do. Write down 5 core beliefs and evaluate why you believe them. Put a core belief into action. Read a poem, scripture, or spiritual passage for inspiration. Have a family discussion about which core beliefs everyone holds. Take your favorite role model and list what core beliefs they held. Undo. Examine your negative beliefs as they relate to fear and mistrust. Open a line of communication with someone who holds radically different values. If you are stuck on a negative belief, be a devil's advocate and argue against it. End your participation in us versus them thinking. Today is about your deepest beliefs, the ones you identify with over a long stretch of time. They can have healing value or the opposite, because beliefs get turned into thoughts, words, and actions that the body-mind reacts to. Everyone holds on to personal beliefs, and in one way or another, we are emotionally attached to them. But not all beliefs are created equal. Some are just opinions picked up and dropped without much effort. Other beliefs are second-hand attitudes we absorbed along the way, usually beginning in childhood with our parents' belief system, as in the choice of religion. Studies find that 70% of first-time voters vote for the same party as their parents, and from then on, they tend to stick with their choice. These sorts of beliefs are at best incidental to a healing lifestyle, but at a deeper level, your health and well-being are strongly influenced by what we're calling core beliefs. Core beliefs lock in your perspective on some crucial questions. Is life fair? Is there a higher power in the universe? Does good triumph over evil? Should I expect the best or prepare for the worst? Should my attitude be relaxed or vigilant? Am I safe? Am I